Good morning. I'm Chrissy Clark, sitting in for Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. Thanks for changing the world. That was one of the messages at a makeshift altar in front of Steve Jobs' home in Palo Alto last night. Jobs is being remembered throughout the world as a technology and design visionary and the leader of one of the most profitable companies in the world. But he was also the quintessential California dreamer, a Bay Area-born counterculture icon who reshaped the whole idea of the Silicon Valley executive. Peter John Schuler reports.
Many of the details of the story are well known. Steve Jobs, the young entrepreneur who, with his friend Steve Wozniak, started a business in his garage that made them both legends. But he was also a distinct product of the time and place.
There were a lot of dads on my street, you know, who worked at Lockheed and were engineers, so I got mentored by a couple of the dads.
Bill Fernandez introduced the two Steves. He met Jobs at Cupertino Junior High School. Woz was his neighbor and about 4 years their senior. Nevertheless, Fernandez thought the two just might hit it off. He says even as a teenager, Jobs was already showing qualities that would serve him later in life.
It was clear, at least in high school, that he had a very good business sense. I remember that he ended up with pieces of equipment, like a nice stereo or a nice open reel tape deck, that there's no way I could have afforded or gotten. And I say, well, you know, how did you get this? And he'd say, I bought this at a garage sale. It was broken, so I got it for $5, and then I fixed the headphone jack, and now it works perfectly. Or I did some haggling, and I ended up with this great tape deck.
Then there was also Steve Jobs, the college dropout, who experimented with psychedelic drugs, a variety of Eastern religions and dietary regimens, and who backpacked through India in search of spiritual enlightenment. College pal Daniel Kottke was a fellow seeker during many of those experiences. He says they first bonded over their mutual interest in Eastern thought.
Be Here Now, Autobiography of a Yogi, Ramakrishna and His Disciples, Cosmic Consciousness by Buck. I think Steve turned me on to that one. So that was kind of our reading program for that first year.
Kottke, who is generally known as Apple employee number 12, may actually have been Apple's first full-time employee.
And when I first showed up at the Jobs house, his sister Patty was plugging chips into the Apple I board on the coffee table in the living room while she watched TV. And I looked at that and I thought, I can do better than that. So I just kind of jumped in.
Kottke says nobody had any idea it would all be so successful so fast. After the company's initial success of the Apple II and the Macintosh, Jobs was pushed out in a power struggle with Apple's board. A decade later, when the company was near the brink of collapse, Jobs returned and led Apple to greater success, first reviving Macintosh sales with the iMac and creating new markets for music players, smartphones, and tablets with the iPod, iPhone, and iPad. He also revolutionized animated films as chief executive of Pixar. Kottke credits the unique combination of qualities Jobs brought to everything he did.
Hard work's not enough. Technical competency is not enough. Charisma is pretty essential, and a lot of technical people don't quite have that. And then the product visionary, I mean, that's a rare thing to find in someone who also has the other qualities.
And as a local boy who made good, Steve Jobs put Cupertino on the map. So says Mayor Gilbert Wong. He says he hopes Cupertino will be able to grow along with Apple in the years to come.
We're going to be looking beyond Mr. Jobs, and I think that he has put a vision here in Cupertino even after he leaves us.
Apple announced that Jobs died Wednesday at 56. He had been battling pancreatic cancer for more than 7 years. He resigned from his position in August, and longtime Apple executive Tim Cook became CEO. Wong says Steve Jobs left a significant legacy for his hometown, one that is distinct to Silicon Valley and California, a legacy of reaching beyond conventional thinking to create something truly innovative and new. For the California Report, I'm Peter John Schuler.
Not far from Apple's headquarters in Cupertino, the hunt continues for the man suspected of killing 3 people and injuring 7 others in a shooting rampage yesterday. 47-year-old Sharif Allman of San Jose is alleged to have opened fire at the quarry where he worked as a truck driver. Police believe Allman remains armed and dangerous. Despite the rain, the California arm of the Occupy Wall Street movement is still occupying. Hundreds marched in the streets of San Francisco's financial district yesterday, and in Los Angeles, dozens of protesters camped in front of City Hall got official support from the city. San Diego is continuing its crackdown on medical marijuana dispensaries. Yesterday, a judge shut down 9 of them, ruling that they violate city zoning laws. The city plans to seek court orders to shut down another group of dispensaries later today. Meanwhile, the federal government is intensifying its efforts to smother the pot industry across the rest of California by targeting not only medical marijuana dispensaries and growers, but also those who do business with them. Michael Montgomery reports.
In the past week, federal prosecutors have sent warnings to several Northern California property owners who rent space to medical marijuana dispensaries. San Francisco attorney Brendan Hallinan represents one of the landlords.
The letters threatened the landlords with potential forfeiture action and criminal prosecution if they didn't have the tenants cease their activities within the next 45 days.
Law enforcement sources say more letters are being sent to locations around the state, including to owners who rent land to growers. Federal prosecutors declined to comment, but government documents show the letters are part of a broader Justice Department campaign to target the business side of California's medical marijuana industry, which the federal government considers illegal. Hallinan says the letters will have a chilling effect and...
If these forfeitures are actually carried out, and even one landlord loses his property, then I think there would be, you know, effectively a dumping statewide of medical cannabis tenants by these property owners.
Medical marijuana operators have other worries, too. Several banks have recently stopped doing business with them. And last week, the IRS ordered the state's biggest dispensary, Harborside in Oakland, to pay $2 million in back taxes after ruling it cannot deduct standard business expenses. Owner Steve D'Angelo says that decision and other pressures by the feds could destroy the medical marijuana industry.
It will put us out of existence, as it will put every other regulated dispenser of medical cannabis out of business.
The state's 4 U.S. attorneys are expected to announce their new marijuana enforcement strategy in the coming days. For the California Report, I'm Michael Montgomery.
And that's the California Report for Thursday, October 6th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Chrissy Clark. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children. The California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org. And URS Corporation, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical services to public agencies and private companies. URScorp.com.